we can have more of an orgasmic state that we're creating. What is it that you actually really want? You know, you go from one person to the next person to the next person to the next person in your lifetime. I have two partners of 20 years. I have to be in love with someone in order to have sex with them.
So welcome back to the Law of Attraction Secrets podcast. We are here today for part two with Jaya, one of the world's greatest sexologists. Last time, we learned so much around sexual transmutation and the power of sex that we had to break it into a second part for you today so that we could dive into the following. If you want to understand oral sex, you want to understand how to instantly release stress through the arousing of your body, how to navigate your partner's sense of entitlement and lack of empathy, how to feel seen and heard in your relationship, today we're going to be diving into financial domination. Like, is that even a thing? Yes, that is a sex kink, by the way. How to be magnetic sexually, attraction, the biochemistry behind it, daily rituals for biohacking your age through sex, all the things that are taboo and things that people just don't speak about. Today's show is filled with gems. I can't wait for you to hear it. And how Jaya navigates multiple relationships at the same time. Monogamy is not a thing for her and for many people in the world. Today, we're going to dive into that.
And so that's also like getting on the same page of like, what is it that we value? What do we love about each other? And I think that, you know, understanding where does the entitlement come from? You can also like give to your partner in this, like, well, how can I give? Maybe it's not like the entitlement is a turnoff, but where can I find my turn on in it? Maybe it's a kinky game that we play. Maybe where I'm in a service role. And then it's really that I'm empowering myself because I'm making the choice to be in that role. That's very, very different. Or it's this conversation that you're having with your partner or seeking to understand like, wow, that's a really intense belief system for me. What has you believe that you own me in this way? You know, what's behind that? What is it that you actually really want? Is it that you just want more sex? Because it doesn't have to come with all those other things.
What if they're like, yes, but I also want you to be more blah, 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 blah. And they start demanding, what do you say then?
Well, then you have a choice to make. You know, you have a choice to make of like, does this align with my values? Am I willing to meet my partner in what they're stating is their need? And, you know, what does my heart say? What does my vulva say? You know, like I check in with my body all the time.
So do I. In fact, that was why I left one of my previous partners. I won't say which one, because I actually asked my body, like, do you want to never feel passion again? And I got the fuck out, even right. though it was tough, even though it felt like, why would I leave this? Because I knew I didn't have passion for them for a year. How was I going to have it ever again? And I was too young to be thinking I'm never going to be sexually turned on by this person again.
Right. So, you know, if your body is like giving you a message and then I consult, it's like a counsel, you know, consult with my heart, consult with my vulva, consult with my mind, consult with my spirit. What's everybody got to say about this? And then I feel in, you know, I may love this person. I may love this person unconditionally, but unconditional love doesn't mean that I don't get to have my own feelings because there's also unconditional love for me from me. That comes first, because when I have unconditional love for me from me, everybody else gets it.
So important. Right there, you just touched such a powerful topic, particularly at this time of year. Unconditional love for myself. Do you truly love yourself? If you don't love yourself, how is anybody else going to ever love you? If you don't truly love yourself and feel, I make love to myself every day. I literally feel my body, and you know what I'm talking about. Uh-huh. I love you. I call myself baby. And that's my nickname that just, I didn't even name it. It just happened. So I'm like, baby, are you okay? I'm like, baby, well done. Like, I call myself baby because I love being called baby. And that would be my name. If I could change my name, it would be baby. And I tell myself, I love you. I make love to my soul, to my mind, because I know, guess what? If I do that, I'm going to emit this frequency of love all around me, and it's going to be magnetizing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I do an exercise with some of my clients when they come, and we'll just sit in front of the mirror. And I have them sit in front of the mirror until they can do what you just did, until they're like, oh my God, you know, I mean,
and in front of someone, it's harder. It's actually way harder in front of somebody. I would find that tough, actually, as the client, to, as the student, to sit there and do it. It's very funny that you do that, because I do something really similar to my clients. So I make them stand in front of a mirror and preach over themselves. You are getting out of this, the same way that I had my breakthrough when I was listening to Denzel Washington's. I'm there, Denzel Washington, telling them, you are going to get out of this. You're going to change your life. You're going to become something great. Like, I really lean into that. So when they do this, do you see something shift in them?
Yeah, we sit there until that shift happens. And sometimes it starts with vitriol. You know, sometimes it starts with, I can't find anything. I'm fat. I'm ugly. I'm old. I'm, you know, all the things that I think we get internalized in our brains. And once that all gets out, it's like we're bleeding the poison out. You know, we get all the poison out, and then the shift starts to happen. Oh my God, actually, I'm beautiful. Oh my goodness, my nose, my lips. Oh, look at my breasts. You know, like, where this starts to then shift. And once it shifts, it's like that transformation sticks, it changes. And I think it quiets that voice. And I love what you're talking about make it even louder, like make that other voice so loud that those internalized negative voices just don't even stand a chance anymore.
I love it. Is this how to be magnetic sexually? Is this how to make people be attracted to you? Let's talk about attraction for a minute.
So attraction, let's go biochemical first. So biochemically, you know, there are actually things that have us attracted to someone or not attracted to someone. And that goes to cranial nerve zero. So cranial nerve zero is so fascinating to me. And animals have it, certain mammals have it, and we have it. And what it's doing is it's reading the immune system of a potential partner. And so it picks up pheromones, which are bigger molecules than smell molecules, and it goes straight to the sex center of the brain. And it's saying, be turned on by this person because the two of you would make really good offspring together.
Wait, when you're attracted to somebody?
When you're attracted to them.
Oh my God, you're right. That's actually, but I actually feel it, not even on a subconscious level. I just literally want to procreate with any man that I think so. I'm like, oh my God, when I was a baby. And now I want chocolate babies now. So I'm like, I really want to have chocolate babies. I always want to have chocolate babies. Oh my God. So every time I see this like really sexy, like black guy mixed race, I'm like, oh my God. Like the more mixed up of your culture, like my mind is going nuts.
And that can create offspring with a stronger immune system, because it's seeing where in your immune system is there a weak link, and it's trying to pick up something. So actually, you know, having these mixes of our systems where one person is really strong and then where we're really weak, that actually helps to create stronger immune systems and offspring. So that is part of attraction.
So I'm actually attracted to what is going to be the strongest immune system and the strongest baby that we can make, the strongest offspring. Yo, okay, where are my chocolate baby daddy at? Because you can call me. You can totally call me. I'm ready for this. This is so cool.
But what throws it off is when we have chemicals in our environment that can throw off the receptors. So birth control can sometimes throw it off. They did a study called the T-shirt study, and the women on birth control couldn't smell the right match. And so this was also really, really interesting, because then it's like, okay, then you go off birth control when you go to have a baby, and maybe now you're all of a sudden like, why am I not as attracted to my partner? And that could be because of the pheromonal signature that you're picking up. So that's just biochemistry of attraction. And then I think we also have attraction based upon our souls. Like, you know, soulmates or people who are going to come into our lives who are there because we have some kind of spiritual connection or some kind of thing that we're working out in our own personal growth and development. And those people who come into our life that we have attraction based on a trauma bond or a karmic bond of some kind. So there's that kind of attraction. And then there's attraction because someone has certain markers, like, for example, women with shiny hair or shiny skin, that looks like maybe we have more estrogen. And so then that's a more, again, fertile for reproduction. Or somebody has a certain personality trait, like confidence. Confidence is very attractive. And then there's just aliveness and life force. So in Tantra, we talked about Shakti energy, and Shakti energy is that vital life force, as I was talking about. So women who have a lot of Shakti tend to be very, very attractive because there's so much life force and there's a glow, there's a radiance that comes off of women with a lot of Shakti. Like, and I'm about to hit Shakti 50 is, and
you're not.
And like, so like, you know,
look
like
amazing. I was going to say you're glowing. You're absolutely glowing. And I can tell. So that's because you have a lot of Shakti.
Yeah. People ask me all the time, like, how'd you get such great skin? How are you so radiant? How are you so alive and have so much energy? And I'm like, it's all just orgasmic. Like, I just live in this orgasmic radiance. And so being in an orgasmic state, being in this beautiful state helps me, I think, just shine from an inner, and also the self-love. I think the inner self-love. Also, you know, you bring a radiance because your soul is alive. In Chinese medicine, they talk about the three treasures, Shen, Qi, and Jing. And Jing is like, if it were a candle, the Jing is the wick and the wax. It's what's burning throughout your lifetime. Shen is the light that you're giving off. And Qi is the energy of the flame, the heat that's there with the flame. And so, you know, that's also something that I've been very aware of in life. And I think sexual energy cultivation can help to produce more Jing and more Qi and that inner light, that inner glow, that Shen to radiate off of you.
Okay. Well, seeing as you are glowing and don't look a day older than 36, I thought you were, I was like, she's in her early, like 30s, somewhere in there, which is amazing. I would say like you're, anyway, so what are your daily rituals that somebody listening can apply, something that you've done, your students have done, to help somebody to glow and use that sexual energy to reduce their age, technically, to go back in time, to reverse and biohack their age?
There actually are studies on this. So there are studies that by having pleasure, by having sexual activity, you can increase length of life. So I always say, you know, you can have more sex so you live longer so you can have more sex. So practices, practical things. Every day before I get out of bed, I do some kind of self-pleasure practice. And this does, again, does not have to be like, oh, I'm like getting my vibrator out. Or it can be, absolutely, like no qualm with getting a vibrator out. But for me, this is often just getting in touch with my pelvic floor, maybe holding my vulva, doing some breath, and getting pleasure activated in my body first thing when I wake up in the morning. So I talked about my O vitamin. I often will have some kind of O vitamin, you know, some kind of pleasure, getting myself into orgasmic state. That doesn't mean climax. And I think that's something maybe we need to distinguish for people. You know, we can have like the achoo climax, or we can have more of an orgasmic state that we're creating, which is when we're bathing ourselves in the biochemicals. Our body has the pharmacy, as we know, of endogenous chemicals that can bathe us in this radiance. So just start by getting some of that pleasure going. Maybe, you know, it's giving yourself a massage before you even get out of bed or jump out of bed, or doing some tapping, you know, something like that to kind of get your energy going a little before you get out of bed. And then I get out of bed and I will sit and quiet my mind and do some breath work. So I always do some kind of breath work, if that's, you know, mouth, fast breathing or breath ladders, or we're using like a weight, a sandbag on my abdomen and doing some breathing, because what I'm doing is I'm downregulating my system by stimulating my vagal nerve. So some humming, some breath work, and I do cold exposure as well. So if you can do cold shower, I know not everybody loves cold showers, but I also have a cold plunge here. So I do a cold plunge, which also just brings so much vitality and aliveness. Yeah. So those are, and then I have practices that are like very deep tantric practices and transmutation, but somewhere in there, I'm doing a transmutation breath like I taught as well.
Oh my God. These are such cool morning rituals. I'm obsessed with it. Okay. We're going to go to our final topic of today. In fact, I'm going to do two topics because this one is something I said we were going to speak about. And I think it's really interesting. And a lot of people deal with it. You spoke a little bit about trauma and holding on and trauma bonding attraction and things around trauma. So if you do have a negative self-image of yourself or unprocessed trauma, how do you handle that?
Well, a couple of things. One, I really believe in trauma therapists, like having a really good person who can support you, who's really trained in supporting you through trauma, someone who really knows how to hold that. Grounding techniques are amazing. And just to share a little of my own personal story, I grew up in an extremely traumatized household. I talked about growing up poor in rural Ohio. And, you know, it was interesting because I experienced trauma almost daily. And so I developed something called CPTSD, which is complex post-traumatic stress disorder, because I never knew if I was safe or not ever in my childhood. My mom would sit us at the end of the driveway and every day she would say, okay, we don't know what he's going to be like today. And we'd sit and I'd always wonder, like, why didn't we just turn around and leave? You know, it was like one of those things. I've talked to my mom since. We've done a lot of healing on all of this. And so anything is possible. I mean, I couldn't even be touched when I first started into my sexual journey. Like I hated anybody touching me at all. And so I wasn't just born like this, I think, is part of, you know, what I'm saying is I've done a lot of work in healing trauma and I've done a lot of it through pleasure. And I think there's something to being pleasure informed and that pleasure is something that can help us to heal. And so working with a therapist, there's something called EMDR. I'm sure you have great work, you know, to help people through things like this. I also did something that was a little controversial. It's not as controversial now as I think it was then, but I had a friend who said, you know, psychedelic medicine could be really, really powerful for helping to heal trauma. And that I was really at kind of like my wit's end with it. I was tired, you know, because I was managing symptoms and I really wanted to just cure it. And so I did some work with psychedelic therapy and my first session was an absolute miracle. I've not had a CPTSD, any trigger, any like negative experience from it, any symptomology from it since that session. So that was really powerful. And that was also part of what taught me that pleasure is so healing. Like we can heal in pleasure. And that's a bit of what like MDMA therapy does, is it floods your body with serotonin. So you're in pleasure and you're able to experience things that were really hard to experience while you're in this more pleasurable state. It allows you to experience the unexperienced that then can help you to heal. So those are some of the things. And that's, you know, it's quite a journey.
Can you imagine a life where you effortlessly magnetize your dreams to you? Financial success, the love of your life, the family of your dreams, and everything you've ever dreamed of at your fingertips. With my approach to manifesting, I have a practical method where you use the power of your creative words. It's called scripting. We write in the past tense in a certain way to attract all our desires to us. I've done this. I met my husband in 3 weeks doing this. I helped myself heal twice. I helped myself get rid of a rash on my body. I have helped myself to elevate myself and get myself out there to so many people. I've changed my bank account number. I've added 2 zeros onto it. I have created abundance like I could never dream of. The most beautiful homes around the world. And you can do this too, like so many of my clients are currently doing right now. The success stories speak for themselves. I want to show you how to do it. This is for somebody who is ready though. Don't even bother coming unless you are ready to transform your life. If you feel like, oh, I'm on the fence, I don't know, none of this shit really works, then baby, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for you. This works for somebody who says, I'm ready. I'm ready to try something else. Try using the power of my words. I want to learn in a curriculum. I want to be in a group with other like-minded individuals and I want to win. This is for entrepreneurs who are ready to go to the next level or maybe get out of corporate America and go to the entrepreneurship world. If you're ready, come and join us inside the Scripting Society and I'll see you there.
Hope you're muted.
Thank you, love. I love hearing those, and they all sound like great methods. And individually, I've tried a couple. I've not done the psychedelic therapy. I have other methods that I do, like just breakthrough work through meditation, diving into the theta and delta states where we can remove those traumas, and a lot of before sleep programming, which is a really powerful thing. I do that with scripting and visualization meditations that I create for my clients one-to-one, where I help them to release their issues that they're holding on to and release the past, because all we have is now. The mm-hmm. past doesn't exist. Neither does the future. All we have right now in now. This moment is now, now, yep. now, now. And that's it. So just be in the now. And those exercises in the morning are beautiful. I'm going to definitely try one or two. I want to try something different. Otherwise, you don't get a different result. So even I'm going to be practicing. So if you're listening right now from home, don't just listen to it. Apply it. Take action. Choose which one of these exercises you like, one of the things you want to do, and make it possible for yourself. Go and try it. If you don't try it, you won't ever know. And that's how we find out what's working for us. Which thing activates the part of our brain that helps us to manifest greater? Which thing from today worked for you? I'd actually love to hear. Tag us in a clip from today. Just screenshot whatever you're watching or listening to right now. Tag myself and Jaya on Instagram. You can just tag us. I'll put Jaya's handle below so you're able to find her, and mine's Natasha Graziano, of course. So just tag us both on Instagram. We'll repost our faves from today's episode if you've enjoyed it. I'm so enjoying it. My final question is around monogamy, because this is such a topic, and I believe in monogamy, yes, but I also believe in multiple soulmates. I also believe that we are absolutely not meant to be with somebody if we don't want to be for our entire life. That's just society. Signing the bit of paper is a contractual thing. It is not love. It is signing papers for security, for family, children, etc. And I've done both. You know, I've signed both every time. But I have a funny view on monogamy. I find it naturally, like, I'm probably more like a dude in that way. Like, I find it really hard to just be with one person. I have been, but then I find myself exiting relationships sooner rather than later, because my eyes start to wander because of this lack of sexual chemistry. So kind of, how does monogamy work? Is it for everybody? Can we expect to shift in the way people enter and sustain romantic partnerships? Let's just go there.
Great question. So monogamy. So let's just look at brain science. Okay. All of us have different neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. So some of us are more dopamine driven. And if you are more dopamine driven, what you talked about, it's like, oh my gosh, there's the shiny object over there and another person over there, because dopamine wants to procreate with a whole bunch of different people.
Yeah.
If you are a higher serotonin person, however, high serotonin is going to make you want to bond with one person.
Right. And so
I love getting my I just got my neurotransmitter test back this morning. And looking at like my own neurotransmitters and how they change, I've always been deficient in GABA. And, right. and just looking at it from orgasm, you know, these are all different phases also of our sexuality. So like acetylcholine is the desire. And then GABA is the moment of orgasm. And then we have serotonin, which then has us bond. Dopamine is the thing that's like, oh, the turn on and go be with that person. It's that part. And so we have this whole phase that happens within our neurotransmitters. And if we're high in one, we're going to be more likely to find ourselves either being a serial monogamist, which means, you know, you go from one person to the next person, to the next person, to the next person in your lifetime, or you may become polyamorous or practice non-monogamy based upon, you know, okay, here's just my neurochemistry. Now, neurochemistry can be shifted. It can be changed. I've worked on getting my GABA up, and now my GABA is too high. You know, I've done too much meditation, because meditation helps to raise GABA. But this, what is it? I think there's also orientation to talk about, because it's not just a lifestyle choice. I think some people are oriented toward non-monogamy, just like we're gay or straight. We have a different orientation.
Right.
And And I really believe, you know, in love. I believe in love. And if you feel like you want to love one person for the rest of your life and be a swan, you know, like mate for life. And that, I think that's the right choice for some people.
I know. I believe in love, and it is beautiful. It is beautiful, but I just believe everything has a sell-by date. I feel like literally every single thing, the food we eat, sell-by date. The relationships we're in, sell-by date. You know what it is? When you start getting toxic, when you start arguing too much, when you start ruining the children's perception on that love. Time to realize that you're better living and co-parenting and doing it differently. And people stay in relationships for kids.
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for transforming a relationship. So I'm in multiple partnerships and we co-parent a child. And it's really interesting to allow to always leave in love. You know, something that one of my shamanic teachers taught me is like, if you think about leaving someone because things aren't working, fall in love with them all over again and always leave in love. And when you do that, you get to transform the relationship, which means, well, maybe now we're co-parents. We have so many relationships and soulmates don't have to be sexual. You can have relationships that aren't sexual blueprint, or maybe they're erotic in a different way. And so I firmly believe in finding what is healthful, what is healthy for you in terms of relationship, and how are you oriented either biochemically or just it's your orientation in terms of practicing monogamy or non-monogamy. And either one can be sacred. Either one can be evolving.
So you believe that some relationships should be polyamorous. Like if you're in a relationship, you should both be able to have other sexual partners.
If that's what works for you and it works for both people, you know, I think that that can be the tricky piece. I oftentimes will get a mixed orientation relationship where one person wants to be monogamous and the other person is very clear that they're polyamorous or non-monogamous. And then it's, okay, now how do we reconcile these two differences? And do we want to stay together? Are you both willing to work on that? Because a mixed orientation relationship can work. It can work when there's enough love in the relationship. And I have seen that work.
I'm so surprised. That's so interesting that it's able to work if there's like two different opposing views. Like we just had on the show, a close friend of mine, really cool guy, Sean O'Malley, and he's like the number one UFC champ. And you will have, anyone who's listening will have heard his episode where he talks really openly. He's in a relationship, but with his baby mom for 10 years, they've been together. He wants to go and procreate loads more people. He wants to have other relationships, and you know, because he can financially do that. So he's like, I don't see why I wouldn't be able to go and do it. That's, I think, what the male species is actually here to do. That's why I feel like they are going to come and literally come and procreate with as many different, because they are trying to spread their seed. If you go back to the hunter-gatherer days, if you go all the way back to the history of time, that's what the point is, to recreate, to procreate. And therefore we get into this opposite feeling of that. Everything has an opposite, polars, different polars. And so the opposite of that is to restrict that and then go into a relationship with one person. Now the restriction is really hard.
And then it comes out sideways. You know, that's where we get all the affairs, is because we're trying to suppress something that is natural human, you know, instinct. Nature. And there's a great book, Sex at Dawn, which talks about this evolution of sexuality. And then there's another great book called A Billion Wicked Thoughts that talks about why, for most women, we want to pair bond at least for 3 years, and the biochemistry of like 18 months to 3 years where we deeply bond, and then how that wears off. And the reason why is because if we have a baby, that's the time frame that we need to like have a protector around in order, you know, for that baby to be at a certain stage. And so, you know, so many things like this are just so fascinating to me. This has been part of my study as a sexologist. And, you know, in my own life, I've had periods where I've been monogamous, where I've been celibate, where most of my life I practice non-monogamy. I have two partners of 20 years. I have another partner of 17 years.
You have three partners.
I have two partners of 20 years, a partner of 16. We're going on 17 years. And, you know,
God, this is amazing. Sean would actually love this right now. I'm going to call him and be like, yo, you need to chat with Jaya. So wait, this is really cool. So you have three different partners all around the same time. So 16, 17, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And you're with all three in relationships. Every night, do you just go, oh, I feel like chatting to John, or tonight I feel like chatting to Jane? Or like, how do you know who you want to chat to? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I think over the years, we've just, you know, it's very easeful now. It used to be not as easeful because we all have different attachment styles. And, you know, attachment styles, those of you who don't know what those are, but some people are more anxious, some people are more avoidant, some people are very secure, and some people are dysregulated in their attachment. And this has been something really important for all of us to understand in the way that we relate. And I have one partner who's much more anxious, and so he needs more of me. And then we've worked that out of like, okay, we nest, where we like live together, we're nesting partners, we're anchor partners, we raise our son together. And then, you know, I have another partner who I see every day. And I actually talk to all of them every single day. Like,
this is the coolest thing ever. I want to do this. Oh my God, this is so cool. Okay, so wait, this is amazing. Does your partner you nest with mind about the other two? And
no, not at all.
The other two know about all the others?
Of course. Yeah, we're very open. So one of my biggest values is honesty and vulnerability in the way that I relate with others. So it would not work for me to have like a don't ask, don't tell, which that is the right choice for some people, but don't ask, don't tell doesn't work. And so, you know, the way that we all work together is very, it's called kitchen sink polyamory, where everybody knows about each other. Like, we have dinner together. We hang out together.
Together.
My son loves everybody. My son's like the luckiest kid in the world because he gets to have like three dads and like six sets of grandparents, you know, eight sets of grandparents. So like he's so
completely. So wait, when you're with one of the partners and they take you home, it's like, this is my girlfriend or my partner. And then it's the same. And so like, are they with other people or is it just one way?
Yeah, we have quite a beautiful constellation. It's called a constellation or a polycule. And so
cool.
Because I have a primary, I don't like the word primary because it kind of takes away from the others. Like they're not as primary, but my nesting partner. And then, you know, they have different partners as well, you know, who fulfill different things. One of my partners lives in Seattle. And so, you know, we see each other like every 3 weeks, and we talk all the time, but we're not living together.
Wow. And so here's the one. This is the thing always people ask. And I always wonder this too. So I know this is a mutual thing. When you have these, what did you call it?
Constellation or a polycule,
a
molecule,
a constellation polycule thing. Like, what if there's new partners coming in? Like, what about all the STI things? Like, I'd be terrified of like that. How do you monitor that?
Yeah, really great question, because I'm a complete germaphobe, and so that is like a really important piece. Part of it is just regular testing. Part of it is, you know, how active is someone?
Yeah,
a lot of it is a conversation. My one partner tests every month just to be, you know, he wants to keep me safe. And I think that that's really important in your choice of partners is, are your partners interested in keeping you safe? How do they respond when you ask for a blood test or, you know, safer sex protocols? And what are the agreements between everybody with safer sex? You know, so that's been a big conversation. We were actually just sitting in the hot tub having this conversation. And it's an ongoing conversation because things may change. And so, you know, some people don't want to do all that work. And for me, it's exciting. For me, it's like, here's this place of vulnerability. And here's this place where we get to talk about these topics and be adults, sexually active adults. And I think this is also a red flag with people you're dating. If they are unwilling to like show you an STD test or talk to you about their practices sexually, or even like take like a blueprint quiz to find out what their erotic blueprint is. Is this someone, you know, you want to be in a relationship with? Because maybe they're not sexual forthcoming, or maybe they're just not very adventurous or willing to go on the journey with you around sexuality and love and intimacy and connection.
It's so beautiful and such a great way to look at it. My final little detailed question is, are you in love with any of them? Have you ever been in love with any of them?
So love. We have so much love. I'm a lover though. I'm so in love.
So am I. I like, so you feel in love. So it basically sustains the honeymoon period so long because you don't have to lose it because you have somebody else there.
Yep.
And then
Yeah, it can keep the biochemistry going because of that. There's actually a thing called sperm competition that's there.
What's that? You know?
It's like where the men are almost like, I mean, the men in my life are not competitive, but it's this just a natural thing that can happen where the sperms are competing, you know, they want to be like the strongest sperm. And so there's this idea that then because of that competition, it's kind of keeping everybody alive. It kind of keeps that like juiciness of testosterone and hormones and
those kinds of things.
Because of that. Yeah. So there's a lot of love. I'm a demisexual. So for the people who aren't familiar with the term demisexual, it means I have to be in love with someone in order to have sex with them.
Oh, and that's how I feel about it. People are you always see on my Instagram, me with like super famous guys all the time who are, I either coach or we work together. We host shows together or they come on my podcast, whatever we're doing together, we're doing things. And people must assume, oh yeah, she's fucking him. Oh yeah, she's having sex with him. I literally won't have sex with you unless I am in a relationship, which means I love you, because mm-hmm. that doesn't turn me on to have random sex. I think I've had random sex so few times in my adult life where I'm like, you know?
Yeah. It's not satisfying at all. Like, it's so satisfying when my heart is connected with, you know, and even more with when my soul is connected. Like, I really feel like all of us in some way are soulmates. And, you know, we're here together to love more deeply. And, you know, they all uplift me and support me. It takes a village with me because I'm quite a woman.
I'm fascinated by this. So you can basically be like, Mr. X, I want to see you today. And then you'll meet. And the other one, I look forward to seeing to you. And then the missing. And then the one you lit. Like, wow. And
I get energetic longing for the one that doesn't, you know, live here. And we've known each other for 20 years.
Wow. But wait, do you not like get jealous when they're with other women? You don't, or whatever they're with, you don't feel.
No. So in open relationships, there's something called compersion, especially those of us who have it as a natural orientation. Like, I very much am poly as a natural orientation. And so my compersion is very high. And compersion means that when my partner is turned on, I'm turned on.
Oh my gosh. I'm obviously this as well. Okay. This is making so much sense to me.
And so I get like really happy when I know that, wow, they're having this great experience, or they're really, really turned on by something. And I actually like want to hear about it and share in it, because there's just, again, aliveness for me, or orgasmic feelings or turn on that happens for me because my partner's happy. I want my partner to be happy.
But what if they're in love with somebody else and then it stops them from loving you because the person says, I want you to be with me more? Well, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, I don't have that scarcity in my system, which, you know, would come from a belief that I have to own someone, as opposed to they are free to love whoever they want to love. And if I get to be the one that they love, amazing. And if for some reason they find someone else who they feel they want to love in a different way, and that means our relationship is going to transform, that may hurt. It might not feel good. My heart might break, but that's, you know, that's what was meant to be. And that can happen in a monogamous relationship, but you can be married to someone and then they
absolutely decide that
they've fallen in love with someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, today has been one of my most exciting, interesting episodes I've ever done. I wish we could do this again in person, but you know what? I've had such a good time. We're going to make sure this is two parts. So on that note, Jaya, thank you so much for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for spending this time with us. Thank you for giving us so many gems, the blueprint to fulfilling and awakening your desires, to teaching us so much around sex, sexual transmutation. I've written pages and pages and pages of notes on everything I've learned today. And I know that somebody here has definitely probably changed their life for the better. They've probably evolved just from this episode. Make sure you listen back to it and share it with a friend. I am going to be sharing this with everybody. It's fantastic. You can get Jaya's book below. The link is below, Your Blueprint for Pleasure. She's one of the best sexologists in the world, and I'm so grateful to have had the pleasure of your company here today. Thank you so much for coming.
My great pleasure, literally.